And I would like to inform all parties at this time the call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
David, can you hear me? We're starting the call. All right,
Adam Palmer joins.
Hey, Adam.
Craig?
Yes.
David should be on in about 30 seconds.
Okay, thank you, Ken.
There was just a little confusion on the time, and I think that's threw some of us for a loop. So he should be there in just a second.
Ray Fassett joins.
Well, just by way of preliminaries, obviously you guys have seen the comments that the registry constituency put together on the contractual aspects of the draft guidebook. And although I did have the pen for some part of this, the product was, this was really the work product of first, a group of attorneys for various registries working together, and then the entire registry constituency. So, I guess I'll take responsibility for the bad part. The second thing is, I think that there are some overarching themes, and then there are some specific issues. And some of the specific issues are easily dealt with, but let's just take the two, what I would say are the sort of fundamental issues here that have been identified as being of concern. The first is the notion that ICANN can change provisions of the contract and to us it appears to be any provision of the contract subject to the right of two-thirds of the registries collectively overturning that decision unless it's related to stability or security or some vote of the GNSO Council. Fundamentally, this notion of being able to change the contract at will is of concern, obviously, and it also completely turns the assumption on its head that has been in the registry contract from day one, which is that ICANN can do what is necessary, change contracts, impose new obligations whenever in response to the need for stability and security concerns. But not otherwise. And here, at the very least, what ICANN is doing is moving the burden to demonstrate that something is not security and stability related onto the registry constituency. The other issue is we're talking about a world where we have a small enough number of registries that everybody can get on the phone and talk to each other and have a conversation. If we're in a world where there are hundreds, if not thousands, of registries, concerns and the override provision becomes unworkable, and registries may very well all be affected by a particular change, but they may not be similarly situated and might have very different reactions to it. So that mechanism doesn't seem to doesn't seem to work, doesn't seem best to work. The other issue with the mechanism in terms of the override and the GNSO Council is that seems like a very new role for the GNSO Council, which is supposed to be devoted to policy jobs. And so this is a significant departure from that. Finally, if we understand the rationale for the this provision, this change provision, is to allow ICANN to have the flexibility it needs to respond to changing technologies or changing conditions. And I think the registry constituency is a little confused by that, because right now ICANN does have the right to impose changes unilaterally on registries, either on an emergency basis or on a permanent basis, to the extent that they are related to items that are within the picket fence. And we can't identify any situation where ICANN hasn't had the authority that it needed to respond to a stability and security issue in the first 10 years of ICANN's history. So that is I think that's obviously a very significant issue that goes all the way through this document. The other is obviously closely related, and that is the sort of incursions on the picket fence. I know that I was certainly participated in the initial discussions about this picket fence, and Chuck, I think you were around too. This really was a matter of significant concern and viewed really as a sort of fundamental protection against minority oppression, or oppression, majority oppression of the minority here. And that concept, although, you know, consensus policy has been used to talk about things in a couple of different ways, that has been a consistent consistent part of the bargain with registries. And because you have taken out that sort of guarantee out of the contract, it creates all kinds of problems and makes essentially the ability to arrive at policy decisions, whether by agreement or because they're consensus policies in the way that is defined, is going to be much more difficult. So those are the two really big issues, and I think pretty much everything pales in comparison. So I wonder whether it would be appropriate, I think, to stop here and talk about those two issues. ICANN, are you guys there?
Yes. I was following your introduction, Becky, and taking notes, but I'm trying to tie that back into the two major issues. So one major issue is the proposed ability from ICANN to amend the agreement, and then there were sub issues under that, or points you were making, and so, but I don't quite. So
the second issue is an issue that is the picket fence issue, basically the limitation on ICANN's ability to impose policies and impose obligations on registries extends only so far as the topic falls within the picket fence of issues that are appropriate issues for consensus policy, and it's adopted in a particular, following the rules in a particular way. So that is, you know, that when you take that out, even though you are, you know, essentially taking the document as it is, or the language as it is, and posting it up on a website, first of all, you have the right, under point number one, to change that, which is quite worrisome. The other thing is that you already there are policies that are, you know, on the board listed as consensus. Well, they're on the website, and the website says, to the extent these may be mandatory, registries may have obligations to follow these to the extent that they fall within the picket fence. Here, that takes out that caveat and says, you know, basically anything that's on this page is something that can be imposed on the registries. And this is not just a sort of theoretical notion, because already the, for example, the funnel, the new registry services, that I think that's up there on the board. It's clear that all of the stability and security stuff falls within the, or it's clear to me, I don't want to speak for any of the registry, falls within the picket fence. But the provisions on giving ICANN time to look at competition issues, while the registries clearly, you know, agreed to this and have agreed to it by contract, I think that is not properly a consensus policy, because it's not within the picket fence. Now, when you have the picket fence in your contract, what you call things as you're developing policy is not that important, so long as you have the protections in your contract. Once you take it out of the contract, though, I think it's going to enormously complicate the process of arriving at policy that registries are willing to take on, that they're willing to agree to, because there's going to have to be enormous energy invested in preserving the picket fence here. So, I mean, that's a fundamental problem, and I think a working problem as it goes through. That makes sense, Kurt? I mean, I know I'm not asking you to agree, although that would be nice, too.
Well, no, so I just want to, so we think that the specification 1 still has that requirement in it.
Yeah, but you can change anything in the contract, including specification 1.
Okay, right, okay.
And there is another, I mean, you do refer to consensus policies as anything that's out there on that list, and I mean, it's important to note that the list at the current time says registries are obligated to comply with these to the extent that they are consensus policies, not just because they're on this list.
Big difference.
It's a huge difference. So, I mean, clearly it says, you know, basically, the existing agreement has this language in it. The current website that you even point to says, under some circumstances, registries may be forced to comply with these. Here, those two protections are eliminated, and when you couple that with the ability to change anything in the contract or the spec, you've created a very, very different situation that is fundamentally different from anything that has ever been contemplated here.
I don't understand.
Yeah, Becky, this is...
Becky, hang on one second. Can you just go back? Because I'm not sure we're getting what you're saying. So it's very possible that you're all in agreement and understand this, but you've stumped us on this one.
Okay, so the first issue is, in the registry agreements now, it says, I registry, number one, agree that I will comply with all consensus policies. And then it defines consensus policies as policies that are adopted in a particular way and that relate to a specific set of topics that are in the picket fence. Right? Following me?
Yeah, that wasn't too complicated. We got that part. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just want to make sure everybody's understanding. And the contract also says currently that the consensus policies, to the extent that they are consistent with the policies listed on this website, and it gives the URL, to the extent that they are consensus policies, you will registry follow them. So what happens here is you delete, well, first of all, you take the picket fence out of the contract and make it subject to ICANN's ability to change it. Two, you make everything on that website a consensus policy by definition. In other words, right now, you can put anything you want on that website. It's only a consensus policy if it's a consensus policy. What you've done in this contract is basically say anything on that page is a consensus policy, whether it fits within the picket fence or not.
Well, doesn't the existing contract say that, Becky?
No, the existing contract says you only have to follow it if it is a consensus policy as defined below.
And I don't think that defined below is there anymore, is it?
No, that's what you take out.
And that can be changed by changing the content at the URL.
Exactly.
Maybe I think this is best. It's like if you guys could just propose specific wording that you think, like we didn't try to move the ball on this one. So if you guys think you can change whatever it is 2-1 of the base agreement to make it more like you think it is now, I think that'd be better than trying to just explain. We're just not seeing how that's changed. I agree it changed on the first issue, that we could change it unilaterally or we could change it, you know, subject to Article 7, but I don't see what the second issue is.
We
could change.
Dan, what's wrong with the language that's in the agreement now?
But what's different about it now is what we're trying to understand.
It's not there, for one thing, and it can be changed at any time. Two, notwithstanding the existence of Specification 1, you're pointing to a website as the authoritative text for consensus policy. That website right now contains policy that the registries have agreed to, but that wouldn't fall within the picket fence. So there are two things here. They're very closely related. The only way to fix this problem is to say, here's the picket fence. You may not impose obligations on registries without their consent unless it falls within the picket fence, and you put that in a contract in a way that can't be changed. So that's
the first issue. The thing about the
no,
case.
That's both issues. I'm afraid it is both issues.
So, but what if we took the picket fence from specification 1 and stuck it in 2-1? Would that satisfy your second issue?
No, because you say you still have the right to amend the contract anytime.
That's the first issue. But on the second, would that satisfy the second issue?
You can't satisfy the second issue unless you satisfy the first issue.
Okay. So I just wanted to clear up the way I'm seeing it, we're talking about the first issue. You're saying the second issue is an issue because of the first issue. But if we address the first issue,
then the second issue would be...
I mean, I think the fundamental issue is I can, shouldn't have the right to change, to impose obligations on the registries unless it falls into a specified, limited, and carefully cabined and long agreed on area of permissible policy changes, in particular related to stability and security, but clearly not completely related to stability and security.
So it sounds like we should kill this, because that's clearly not what we intended, and we can fix the language. So let's go back on our end and look at how we can fix the language. Our goal is not to be able to change a website which then imposes consensus policy.
But your goal is to be able to change the contract, right?
Well, exactly, and what we've asked for, and I don't think we know the answer to yet from our end, is how to go about that in a meaningful way without being stuck in a situation where we need to separately negotiate 1,000 agreements.
Well, so let me ask you a question. I guess the issue is, why do you need to change the contract? I understood it to be in order to fulfill your mission, which is essentially what you would be able to do through the picket fence changes. So you can change the contract anytime you want by adopting consensus policy that falls within the picket fence. And I guess another way of asking this question is, when has that been inadequate?
Is it possible here that what the problem is that you're equating situations with registrars and the RRA to the registries, and are we sure that that's really a reasonable thing to do?
Well, that's similar to what we've discussed in the past, where we've been trying to amend the RAA for the past year and a half in accordance with the way specified in the agreement. In their agreement to accomplish a number of additional protections for registrants. Many of those changes, we think, actually fall outside the picket fence.
Well, but I mean, that is the fundamental. Let me say two things. First of all, I think that Chuck's exactly right. The kinds of issues you have with registries are not exactly the same as the kinds of issues that you are having with registrars. So the first thing is, this is the registry constituency with a hat on that says this. We're coming at this from the kinds of issues. So changing the registry agreement, because you're changing the registrar agreement, which is already different anyway, seems to be problematic.
Becky, this is Dan. I think the what you say and what you're and Chuck's saying is probably true. Looking today or looking backwards, that the kinds of problems we've had with registries and the kinds of problems with registrars are different. I think what we're trying to do is look ahead 5, 10 years, or 500 or 1,000 registries later, or 10,000 registries later, and we're thinking about the kinds of situations we might have in the future and how we might need to change the agreement, 2, 5, 10 years from now.
But
and we don't know what we're going to have. We could have the stuff that you guys are thinking about. We could have registry flies or shell registries, or who knows what the market.
Okay, and if it's not a stability or security or dispute about the registration of a name, the things within the picket fence, ICANN doesn't have the authority, it doesn't have the right to change those things unilaterally. It can go to the registries and say, we would like you to agree to something, and they have done that. But I mean, this is really, I understand what you're saying. You want the ability to affect things outside of the picket fence unilaterally.
But I think it's a little bit broader than that. So, and this might be where the crux of the problem exists, right? So what we're looking for really is a mechanism to be able to change a large number of agreements not unilaterally, but through some process other than requiring 1,000 agreements to be changed unilaterally, bilaterally.
Let's just think about what the implications are. The implications are there are 1,000 registries and 1,000 different business models, and what you propose may be perfectly fine for 60% of the 1,000 registries, for 600, and devastating for 400, and you still want to be able to impose that change. What we're saying is you don't have that is just outside of the scope of ICANN's authority, and whether it's unilaterally or by a vote of a majority of registries doesn't matter, because that's the particular issue. Is you have the right to change things in ways that disrupt business models and all of those other things that we're worried about, to the extent that the changes fall within the agreed upon fundamental bargain here. The fundamental issue is you're asking businesses, which may be, with all different kinds of business models, to say, I'm gonna invest a lot of money. I'm gonna go out to my shareholders, or I'm gonna go out to the investors and get money and build something that can change in ways that I can't anticipate. We recognize that from the very start that ICANN needed the ability to do that in some circumstances, but those circumstances were limited to this picket fence. And so, there's a real fundamental issue here.
Can I ask another question? Because RegisterFly is brought up all the time, and it's a great emotional one because it failed. What exactly is it that ICANN wished it had the right to do in that situation that possibly we could address with some other provisions that aren't as sweeping?
So I think that's a reasonable question. But it's a different approach than we took to forming this form agreement. So if what the registry constituency as a whole is saying is that there once we set this form agreement in place, you got to live with that for the next 10 years.
No, ICANN, what they're saying is you can't change things. They're saying two things. One is show us why you need to be able to change it. Over that, because given the experience of the last 10 years, we haven't identified a reason that you would need that. Second, they're saying whatever else might be acceptable, it is never going to be acceptable to give you the right to change, to impose policy that goes beyond the picket fence.
John, do you want to change?
Hang on, I didn't get to finish my point. So my point was that if, in fact, we are going to have to use this form contract without a mechanism which would allow us to make fundamental changes to, and I think there's a list of things that came out of the RegisterFly experience for us. One is some form of sanction or some ability to operate under the agreement in a different way, or to cause performance under the agreement in a different way other than blowing the agreement up. I think that's even more serious an issue when you look at registries. I can go down the list, and we've certainly talked enough about the registrar space, and certainly the people talking on this call, and I'm certain the others understand those issues as well, if not better than I do. So I think we could, in fact, go back. If the message is absolutely you can't do this way, then I think we've got to go back and look at whether there are things that we need to make sure are in here ahead of time, and think about that coming up on this second draft. Alternatively, what we're looking for is I thought this was part of the dialogue in Cairo, so maybe you've had the discussions and you decided this is not the way to go. Alternatively, I thought what we were looking for is some more, if you didn't believe our approach was reasonable, some more reasonable way to approach changes that are outside the picket fence, where the parties could agree, you know, generally that it was going to go forward. I certainly understand your points about, Becky, understand your points specifically about you need certainty in your business in order to obtain investment and to go forward in a meaningful way. I've been a general counsel and I've been an attorney in the private corporate space for a number of years before I came to ICANN. I certainly understand that. On the other hand, every agreement, and we've had this discussion in negotiations, every agreement has, you know, different thresholds for different parties and some risk involved on either side. And so I think where we're, what we're trying to find is a natural place for that risk to exist where both parties could agree there's an acceptable way for us to make a global change across all of the registry agreements. And if you're saying there's just no way for that to happen.
But no, we're not actually
saying. Let me finish. So there's never going to be a way for you to be comfortable with that. Then I think that's a message, and we've got to take that message back and think about it and what that means to the form of the agreement.
Well, I would put this a different way, John, and I'm not being facetious here. There is a way right now for you to change the agreements across the board, and that is, and it has two elements. One is the consensus policy development, and the other is through policy development that involves consensus policy, but that may contain elements of things that are not consensus policy. And then I agree, there's, you know, if some registry decided and wasn't subject to the funnel as it currently exists, that they didn't want to give you 15 days for, you know, looking at whether there were concerns about competition, then you would have a problem because that is essentially something that the registries have to agree to. I think we understand you do need the ability to change the contracts across the board. We don't understand why you need the ability to do that in areas outside the picket fence.
There seems to be an assumption that we need a one-size-fits-all thing here for all registries, and I think that's part of the flaws in what's going on here. On the one hand, we're advocating innovation and competition and so forth, and yet we're trying to put everybody in a box. The reality of the matter is that some changes outside the picket fence, you know, would be okay for some registries, and they would not be for others. Is that a bad thing? I know it's more complicated, but frankly, you know, there's enough revenue being collected from registries to be able to deal with that.
Yeah, I certainly understand that point, too. I think the comments that were received yesterday, though, kind of went opposite that. And in that call with the GNSO Council, or I guess I don't remember who it is, but you chaired it, Chuck, so you know better than I. There was what we heard to be a call for a similarity of agreements. Are you taking a position different than that?
Well, first of all, John, there were people on there was at least one person, maybe two on that call that advocated that. I don't think that you can conclude from that everyone on the call supported that. That's not the case.
I'm not sure what I was saying.
It's also not part of
maybe I misunderstood you. There's certainly plenty of room for commonality of agreements on a lot of issues, but if we're assuming that that's true of all issues but beyond the picket fence, I think we're going too far, and we're losing the benefits of innovation and competition because we're not allowing some variability. And I made a comment somewhat like that yesterday.
John?
Yeah, so I think the general principle that we've been working with is how to make the cost lower from the ICANN side, because you're the people helping pay for it with your businesses, right? And one of those factors clearly is to create an agreement that fits with as many registries as possible, and following the GNSO recommendation, there should only be exceptions to that on a case-by-case basis.
But actually, I don't think that that's what the GNSO recommendation says.
It doesn't. Absolutely, we recommended that there be a base agreement, but I don't think you can find that overly restrictive language in terms of what modifications could be made to that. Now, I understand why you want to minimize those, but I think we have to be very cautious there. Keep in mind, John, you said you're asking us to live with this for 10 years. Well, you're also asking us to live with it for 10 years.
Can we also talk about the 10 years on that, too? That was a number that ICANN threw out. If there was... I don't think there's been any statement by the registry constituency that 10 years has to be the amount. If the agreement is shorter to take into consideration some of these aspects, as long as there's the renewal expectancy, I don't think it has to be 10 years. I don't remember anyone ever putting forth that number.
The number was put forth generally as an example in PDP. No definite number was ever stated. The idea was that there would be a commercially reasonable length of the agreement to allow time to recoup investments and so forth.
Right, but if there's a renewal expectancy and there's strict guidelines around that, I don't think we should insist on 10 years. I mean, if there are some concerns that ICANN can't touch the agreement for 10 years or neither party can touch the agreement 10 years, then... I'm not sure Neustar would have a strong feeling one way or the other to shorten that agreement to meet some other needs that ICANN has.
Well, then that really goes to the basis of the presumption of renewal. If it's 1 year or 10 years, but there's a presumption of renewal, and the presumption of renewal requires that we follow same or similar terms, then. They're still the same issues, but these are exactly. I am not at all seeking to undermine what you're saying or discount it. I think, these are the discussions that we had internally in trying to set out a base agreement. We certainly understand these concerns, and that's why we're here to listen, not to argue your points, but to try to understand how to make the most effective agreement that is useful for ICANN, the broader community, and this constituency.
John?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Ken Stubbs, John. There's something else I think that comes to mind here, and that is that ICANN, I think, needs to work a little more prophylactically in terms of ensuring that you don't end up creating entities or models that create nothing but problems. If you go back to when the original five registrars were originally accredited by ICANN, and we've taken that time period now in the last 10 years, we've seen that there have been certain models that tend to create problems. And I think you need to take a very close look at that, and that ties in later on with discussions about the Cray Report. But I think if you look very closely at what kind of models can create the kind of concerns that you have, you may be able to resolve issues even before you get to the contract stage. Rather than writing a contract to take care of every single issue that would come up and the nightmares that could arise because of models that were created that didn't belong in the market to begin with, might be a good idea to take a look at the abhorrent models and see if there's some way of parsing them out early on in the process so that you don't end up creating monsters. Innovation is wonderful. At the same point in time, if you're taking a step backward, but.
Another point that I just want to raise is that...
Can I respond to Ken real fast? Because I think
sure.
Ken just made a really good point. We've talked about this a bit too. We could not have, we talked about the registrar marketplace and the differences, but there are potential similarities as the market in registries grows. And we could not have, maybe some of you could, but I certainly couldn't have looked in 2000 and you know, projected that the batch pool would exist the way that it does, that the registrar marketplace would have grown in exactly the way that it did, or through the mechanisms that it did, and created the opportunities, or created this marketplace that resulted in some bad actors participating in it. We're of a viewpoint that's possible, that you're going to have that sort of situation occur again, and we're trying to figure out how to do it. So I'm completely in agreement with you, Ken. If you can help us understand what those future business models are and how to cordon those off or treat them, you know, differently with a different form of agreement or approach it in some way, we're all ears, because we've thought about that and we don't know how to do it.
Yeah, because
let me just ask a question here, because I think one of the sort of profoundly different issues is that when you're dealing with registrars, you're dealing with consumer protection issues in a way that you are not with dealing with that kind of issue on a registry basis. So I just wonder whether, we're losing some of the differences between registrars and registries that make them different creatures and less likely to have the kind of register fly consequences. So clearly, you know, failover issues and those kinds of things are issues that you want to be able to anticipate and respond to. But not really, you know, ripping off consumers.
Yeah, and I think I made a point like that yesterday in the Q&A session. That actually, and granted, there aren't the numbers or even the variety of registries that we will have in the future, but the bottom line is that the registry agreements have worked quite well, and I don't fault you at all for trying to look at the future and make sure you're covered there, but I think, you know, where some concern there is valid, it is somewhat a different situation with registries and registrars. Now, I think, was it Jonathan that had something to say?
Yeah, I think another point just is where the model that you had put forth suggested as for collective action by the parts of registries who are competitors, with respect to stability and security issues, it doesn't raise, generally does not raise antitrust or competition questions, but there is a real concern This is Jonathan Spence with VeriSign.
Thank you.
There's a real concern that we might be put in a situation where we face antitrust and competition law concerns about trying to respond to a proposal that ICANN makes to amend the agreement if it touches upon a number of different other areas. So that's, you know, the scope of trying to have this unilateral collective act, you know, agreement is problematic.
So that's an interesting comment too, and we've taken some advice on that. But if you have a different perspective, particularly coming from where you do, we'd be interested in understanding it.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the concern is that, you know, given the ability, you're asking registries who, in particularly different business models or competitors or group, that you are opening up the registries to, you know, cross suits and actions. That if you were to take a position to, in connection with amending the agreement that affects all of these and affects your competitors, as you get outside the security and stability area, real risk of litigation, antitrust claims, competition law claims as you go to outside the United States, you know, real problematic. And so you could actually have a situation where you might want to oppose a situation, but you would be basically prevented from discussing with anybody else.
Yeah, but even in the U.S., there are some competition concerns with the scope of joint ventures and trade associations and rules they can establish that exceed what is reasonably necessary to achieve a common, legitimate common end.
Yeah, so I know someone yesterday, and I was thinking it was a registry participant in the conversation, mentioned, you know, how could we possibly come up with the GNSO Council being involved?
That was me.
Oh, okay, good. So as part of that, the formula, and so that was, you know, in part an answer to exactly the problem that he was setting up. We were looking for some other veto right that existed outside of the registries to address in part that issue. So, you know, I completely agree these are complicated issues, and this is also the problem of adjusting pieces of it. As you know, we adjust a piece, we got to go back and think about how that impacts the rest of the agreement.
Right, and as I said, yes, there's several problems with involving the GNSO in that regard, and I was going to bring that up as another aspect of the issues that Becky raised. Number one, it's a policy development body, having the GNSO look at the, you know, contractual changes is very different than having them develop a consensus policy that would be implemented by registries if it fits within the picket fence. That's a totally new direction, and I think one that goes more in the legislative direction of the council, contrary to what the board has recommended with regard to GNSO improvements.
So, Chuck, this is Dan. I think, just a couple things to help flesh out the direction we were trying to go there is, on one hand, we had in mind the example of the registrar accreditation agreement, where if we do want to make change to the form of that agreement across all registrars, the path to do that goes through the GNSO. We have to follow the, not exactly the PDP consensus policy.
No, it's the RAA, the original RAA term.
So we need the GNSO to give us a two-thirds recommendation that the form of the agreement should be changed, basically. And so we're working there right now with you guys on the RA amendments. That's where the GNSO comes in. Also, the idea, and I understand your point about turning them into a legislature, but they can serve as a proxy for the, you know, if you take the idea that the GNSO somehow sits in the role of the local internet community for the GTLD space, you can use the GNSO Council, which is supposed to be representative. I totally understand where you're coming from and the issues with that, but we were looking for something besides some assurance to not registries, but to the broader community that ICANN and the registries wouldn't get together, push through agreements that they find objectionable. I mean, if you look back at the history, most of the times when a proposed change to a registry agreement comes forward, it's ICANN and the registries on one side, and it's non-contracted parties who raise concerns about it on the other side. So,
can I just make an observation? Because I think this is a sort of fundamental issue. I mean, I think what's going on here is that ICANN is expressing this concern that at some point they could be in a situation with the registries like the RIAA. And the registries are saying, on the other hand, the contract model has worked for 10 years, and we don't understand what circumstance you could need additional authority. I mean, I think there's this fundamental gap, and if we focus on, you know, really identifying what it is that ICANN really needs here and the ways in which the current contract doesn't provide that, then we might be able to have a sort of solutions-oriented discussion. But right now, there's really a huge gulf.
Let's look at the domain tasting issue. That's a real live issue that just happened in the last couple years, and the process worked. We didn't all agree that support the PDP the way it came out or the recommendations, but consensus was reached based on the definitions within the bylaws and with regard to consensus policy and the operation of a PDP, and it is going to be implemented here in the next few months. That's a very good example that the process is working. Granted, it took some time, but without that protection, it's crazy for businesses to enter into an agreement to implement consensus policies that are unknown up front. And your boss, Paul, said it as well as I've heard anybody say it last week at the IGF.
And not just that process, there were, you know, there was at least one registry that stepped up and implemented some things voluntarily, which we think if there are certain emergency needs of ICANN, that registries that are responsible would step up and implement what needs to happen.
Well, also, ICANN, in our existing agreements, has the ability to implement emergency policies under certain circumstances with certain requirements. So with that there as well, that's, you know, we've all signed agreements to support that.
I think I'm not sure where else to go with this. I mean, we totally understand your point. I think what we're hoping for, what we proposed, and we can talk more about the format is, or the exact mechanism, but is a way like we have with the RRA, like we have with the RAA, like any lots of other kinds of agreements where the agreement, the form of the agreement, can be changed across hundreds or thousands of registries without bilaterally negotiating, which could lead to different provisions in each of the 900 or 500 or 1,000 agreements.
But wait a second.
And
wait.
So if you guys are fundamentally rejecting that idea, then we just, like John said, we have to go back to the drawing board. Or do you guys want to talk about, you know, other mechanisms for doing that or whatever?
But I guess I'm sort of surprised because I don't think that there are that many places in the world where you can change an agreement across, you know, hundreds or thousands of different countries.
The RRA, I just mentioned that as an example.
If you're a government contractor, the government...
plenty of instances across licensing, IP licensing, I'm sure you have clients that do it.
Every registrar's registration agreement, you know, if you go to Network Solutions and register a name, it'll say, we can change this agreement. We'll give you notice if you don't like it. You know, so...
I actually don't know of any situation that is similar to this where somebody has the unilateral right to change material terms that are going to affect the fundamental business.
And remember, registries can't go to some other body to license that right.
So that's the issue, and that's why we want to work carefully on what's the mechanism. But the idea that a party can change it unilaterally, I mean, go look at the RRA. Go look at the Network Solutions Registration Agreement, the GoDaddy Registration Agreement. Look at the ARIN Registration Services Agreement, which probably lots of you guys have entered. If you have IP addresses, ARIN can change the terms of the IP address registration agreement unilaterally with just notice to you guys.
Yeah, but let's not compare it out of left field. Let's not compare it to the registrars, because you could always shop around at other registrars. There's always market choices to which registrar you use. We have to use ICANN. Unfortunately, that's the model we have. If you take away our right, there's nowhere else to go. Right? So you can't be a monopoly or a space.
I agree it's different. The question is there any way we can work together to come up with a mechanism where we can coordinate changes across hundreds or thousands of registries? Or do you fundamentally reject that and we have to individually negotiate a change to the agreement?
Okay, I think what we're saying is we need to understand the circumstance under which you think this would come up, and in order for us to address the concerns that you're expressing, we have to have some way of imagining a practical way in which it could come up that you don't have the tools you need.
So we can certainly do that. I mean, you know, I think that you are, I think that it doesn't take a lot of imagination to think of different ways this could come up. So we'll be happy to put together you know, some notes on that. I don't have any issue with that.
But I think
we need that to begin to get a little closer together.
I think that's a good proposal, and we have no problem with you know, working through some specific scenarios.
But I get in the queue. This is David.
Actually, David, can I interrupt you? Say, unfortunately, I have to get off this call now. So I was going to relinquish my noise, and I'm sure everybody on ICANN's side would be very happy.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I'm
so untrue, Becky.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay. Thanks, Becky.
Okay. I've been listening and holding, biting my tongue here. But
I don't really understand your point that you're prevented from making what we'll call global changes, 1,000 registries. That's what the PDP is for. And all we're saying is that we want something in the contract that limits what that global kind of PDP can do, and what that's the picket fence. Now, maybe there are items in the picket fence that you think need to be changed. I don't personally see any, but if that's what is bothering you, I think we can address that. But you still, your complaint that we're trying to keep you from making changes simply isn't true. I mean, that's why we have the PDP.
David, I think this is Dan. I think probably the best way, I like John's idea, that we'll try to come up with some scenarios of examples where we think, just guessing now, looking 2, 5, 10 years in the future, where we think we might need to change the agreement and the change wouldn't fall within the picket fence. And Kurt mentioned some examples we'll probably start with are the things we're proposing to change in the registrar accreditation agreement. Even just simple things like the way ICANN can give notice. Right now in the RAA, we have to give, if we want to impose a new consensus policy on registrars, we have to give written notice, which means like a fax or a FedEx to all of 900 different registrars, which costs, as you can imagine, a lot of money or a big hassle to try to fax 900 different people all across the world. Okay. So we propose to change that by switching to email notice plus posting on the web.
Yeah, well, that's
an example of a change that wouldn't be within the picket fence. And we wouldn't want to go individually negotiate that amendment with 900 registrars, yet we want to do it to make it more efficient and modern, et cetera.
Couldn't those kind of changes be classified as administrative? I'm sure the attorneys could come up with a better term than I can, but I'm not sure we would be, you know, unable to come to terms on things like that.
And that's not a problem. That's the kind of thing that a consensus policy could clearly cover. Who is going to, in the GNSO, is going to object to something that is a consensus policy that we're going from written notice to email notice?
Oh, I'm not sure we need consensus policies for those kind of things, but we can talk about that further.
And I'm not sure, we won't have to get into dividing the picket fence or whatever, but I'm not sure that would be in the picket fence. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily, the internet's not going to break if we can't do email notice instead of fax notice.
No.
So I'm not sure it would be in the picket fence. But we'll pull through other examples along those lines. And you know, I'm sure there are counterexamples where we could do, you know, horrible, unimaginable things to the contract unilaterally or something. That's, we won't invite you guys to make those up. But the fundamental idea to keep the idea of consensus policies, the picket fence, that was all supposed to be intact. But the idea is we don't know what might change 2, 5, 10 years from now, and we need to be able to react to it. And we want to have some mechanism with where we have to have first notice and comment and consult with registries on what an appropriate change might be, and then we put a change out. And whether, you know, we propose a veto mechanism. I've seen other places have said it shouldn't be veto, it should be an approval mechanism. We'd have to get your approval first. But whatever it is, if there are widely agreed, acceptable changes to the agreement that we widely think should go through, we, the community, the registries, ICANN, we ought to be able to do that on a global basis.
But Dan, keep in mind that even if with the two mechanisms you have in there right now, the board with a simple majority vote can overturn it.
So we're all ears. But if there's anything you guys want to tweak or change or re-alter or redo the mechanism, we definitely want to hear that. We want to see other models.
Yeah, my proposal is that you stick to the PDP. And if you want to have an administrative cleanup, it's clearly something that you could do with a PDP. What you are proposing is basically turning ICANN into a government. You want ICANN to be able to pass laws, and don't agree to that, and it's a fundamentally bad principle. The contract between ICANN and the registries is sui generis. It is not anything comparable to the contracts, even with registrars.
And in fact, David, it's worse than a government contract. You know, we operate .us, and I will tell you that if the Department of Commerce wants to change the agreement, they can only do so in such a way as to not cost us any money, or they have to pay us reasonable compensation. That's the requirement of government contract law in the United States. So, you know, I don't even want to get into that discussion about, you know, reasonable compensation for anything that costs us money that ICANN wants to implement, because I think that's a really bad path to go down. But you know, it's even worse than a government contract.
That's my point precisely. I think at this point, perhaps we should move along. Now that Becky has left, I'm not exactly where we want to go with the other significant provisions. Chuck or Jeff, do you have something that you want to emphasize? I understand we have, what, about 30 minutes?
Yeah, I think there are certain provisions that I'd like to just emphasize, because I'm not sure if, you know, the written submission, you know, did enough to go there, or if they have any questions. So, I mean, I can go through some provisions, and I'm sure others have other provisions.
Go ahead.
I mean, the first one I had a comment was on, and I'm assuming you guys read our statement, but on 2.7, the protection of legal rights of third parties. So we understand that the GNSO decided that there should be mechanisms to protect the legal rights of others, although they couldn't agree as to what those mechanisms should be. You know, it's our opinion that we don't need this provision in the agreement, because presumably parties have to propose mechanisms in their application and on how they're going to protect the legal rights of others. And assuming that passes the criteria set by ICANN, you know, for the RFP, that those will be incorporated by reference into the agreement, or it should be incorporated by reference. But the blanket statement that, you know, that we have to protect the legal rights of others is just too broad, it's too ambiguous, and I think that I don't see really why that provision is needed. Is there any other reason why that's in there?
So I guess the are there particular parts of Attachment 7 that you thought were problematic, or are you objecting to the idea that mostly Attachment 7 was trying to implement the what was it called, Patrick? The pro working group. Protecting rights of others, the idea that you have to, if you're going to have rights, you have to be capable of authentication. And but if there's anything in Attachment 7 you think ought to come out, or if you just think it should be replaced generally and we should stick those obligations into the application, I mean, and then we just bind people to what they say in the application, that's kind of a different approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so first of all, the pro work group was such a mess. I mean, to take anything from that working group as any kind of gospel is awful. I mean, you'd have to go back to the records, but there was very little participation. It was dominated extensively by IP attorneys and others trying to impose mechanisms. It's really an awful model to use. But given that, you know, I understand why there's a need to propose mechanisms to deal with the legal rights of others, and I really believe that eliminating the attachment and simply requiring a registry to abide by what it had in its proposal, absent written agreement otherwise, by, you know, consent by both parties, I think is the way to go with that. And I also want to draw your attention to the language, which doesn't say it says which at a minimum include those provisions set forth at specification 7. So again, I think the appropriate way to deal with it is, and there should be an express provision which isn't in the agreement that says that the registry operator agrees to implement everything in its application, or, you know, or agrees to abide by its application. I don't think that's actually in there yet.
If this is Plage, just to follow up on 2-7, Dan, I'll let you answer Jeff's question, then I just have to follow up on 2-7.
I'm sorry, I'm reading the text. I missed Jeff's question again. I'm getting Jeff's comments, and we'll have the recording. We'll go back. I think what we'd really prefer is if you can come up with, you know, if there's wording or if it's just as simple as delete the thing, we can take that comment too. But
I mean, it's the recommendation is you delete it, and you actually have a provision in the agreement that states that you're going to implement or change the wording that's just saying you're going to implement the protection mechanism set forth in your application, and you attach that application to the contract.
Attach the application to the contract?
The response, the RFP response.
I think, aren't you talking, Jeff, about the proposal for a new TLD will include rights protection mechanisms, and you incorporate that. Is
correct.
That what you're saying? Yeah.
That's correct. No, I mean, in general, other provisions of the response that you have to the RFP should be incorporated, too. I mean, if you're a community-based, that should be incorporated. I mean, there's a bunch of other things, but yes, certainly with respect to this provision, you just have to have a rep that says that you will implement those procedures set forth in your application.
Okay, thanks for the comment.
Dan, on if I could, is there anybody else that has a question on 2-7?
Oh, okay. Ahead.
All right, thanks, David. Dan, when you read 2-7, it talks about procedures for the launch of the TLD and initial registration and ongoing protection. So the ongoing protection, was that intended to involve anything other than the startup mechanisms? Because it just didn't make sense, that wording, ongoing protection. Was ICANN envisioning more ongoing protection other than the UDRP?
Possibly. I think if you look at attachment 7, the idea is it's open-ended. So if new things come up, and the one thing referenced in 7 is this idea of the an IGO DRP. So that's ongoing. UDRP is ongoing.
That would be incorporated by consensus policy, I would assume. So obviously we'd comply with consensus policies.
Well. Also, there's if you look at this, one way you can get some light on this is if you look at the scoring mechanisms for this particular area, you'll see that minimal, to pass, you've got to offer UDRP, of course. But there's another point given if you go beyond the UDRP, so that wouldn't necessarily have to be a consensus policy if somebody proposed it. So, and I'm sure we'll see a lot of that.
So, I mean, do we want to go on?
Can I ask a follow-up question to a comment that Jeff made?
Sure.
Yeah, Jeff was alluding to certain representations that would be attached, become attachments to the contract, in effect. Can I assume that is something that you're planning on doing anyway? As these various proposals come in, they're going to be loaded with representations as to how they intend to service the community and so forth. Let's as an example, do these representations become attachments to the contract that allow you to move in and enforce some sort of non-compliance, or are they just representations that are in effect inducements to grant the TLD subject to a standard registry agreement that may or may not incorporate enforcements in those areas?
Yeah, so it's intended that restrictions be incorporated into the agreements for community-based registries.
So that will be a separate provision. At the beginning of the agreement, it says there'll be a separate provision that picks up if you promise in your application to be restricted for communities. We'll pick that up in a special provision. Otherwise, generally, if you set on, page 86 of your RFP response that you'll do X, Y, and Z,
If you're lying, that might violate the a provision if you were lying on your application. But otherwise, we're not going to manually build 500 agreements based on HX1, you know, 87 X, Y, and Z, everything everybody said. For one thing, they might have said things that would be contrary to the agreement, and just sticking it somewhere in your RFP doesn't mean you're allowed to do that. So the general scheme is you do what's in the registry agreement without regard to what you said or didn't say in your application.
Dan, a little clarity there. So if a bidder proposes to go beyond the UDRP in some specific way, for example, to offer a sunrise period, and they don't offer that sunrise period, would there be any compliance thing you could do about that or not?
Yeah, that gets into a touchy gray area. You know, that at a minimum, there's in the current draft, you have to represent and warrant that all the statements he made during the negotiations were true and correct. Now it gets spicy, so I think I'll just avoid.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. I didn't. It's really not an issue for me, but I was kind of following up on what I heard there just to make sure I was clear.
Well, we certainly took a note from Jeff's comment that where there are protection of rights of others issues, that is something that should be incorporated as restrictions in the agreement.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Okay, yeah, that's right.
It's connected with this. In the application agreement, there's a waiver of the right to sue ICANN, and I've raised the question in comments that I submitted. Have you given any thought to a specific provision comparable to that in the UDRP that says that nothing prevents an aggrieved party from bringing a lawsuit in a court against another party? What I'm thinking of is that there are two applicants, or there are applicants for new TLDs, and one of them believes that its trademark rights have been infringed, but under the dispute resolution policy, the panelist has said no, there's no infringement. Does the offended applicant have the right to bring a lawsuit against the other applicants?
I think I understood what you said, but could you, do you mind elaborating on that just a little bit?
Well, okay, in the UDRP, from the very beginning, the UDRP is not strictly speaking an arbitration, because judgments under a UDRP are not enforceable in court, and the two parties who are fighting over a trademark can always, either one can bring a lawsuit. We're going to have similar situations here where somebody, let's say eBay applies for eBay and somebody else applies for eBay, and your panelist says, oh no, they're totally different, no legal rights involved. If I were eBay, I would certainly want to bring a lawsuit against eBay, but I'm concerned about the language in your application that reads very broadly that anyone who has applied for a TLD has waived all legal rights.
Yeah, so certainly the provision that you're referring to in the terms and conditions at the beginning is not intended to apply that way. The dispute resolution processes are intended to be similar to the UDRP, where they of course could be appealed or could be taken into court, because they are only advisory opinions about the dispute. They're not binding arbitration forums that have that impact in a court.
Well, good. Okay. I would suggest, though, that you need to refine your language.
I think that's a great tip, and thank you for the advice.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, if we can just keep going, and if people have issues, because I just want to point out a couple other things that in the contract.
Yeah.
So the Section 2.9 in the transparency of pricing, and I'm not going to touch on something that I'm sure you'd expect, but there's a statement in there that says registry operator shall ensure through its registrar, I believe it, that each ICANN accredited registrar will clearly display at the time of registration a link to an ICANN designated web page, blah, blah, blah. is it that you just want us to state that in the registry registrar agreement, or do you want to us to have to enforce that as well? And I'm not sure why that would be in a registry enforcement as opposed to an ICANN.
So that's, we got your comment there. That's a good question. I think, I mean, the general scheme there is that, you know, we don't want to get into the business. I mean, tentatively, this is what the draft is anyway, and we're going to come out with a paper shortly, I think, on price controls. But this isn't a price control. It's not a price cap. It's just an effort to get transparency there so that it's known to registrants what might happen to their registration price when it comes to renewal time. And if a registry wants to, you know, guarantee its rate's not going to go up more than a certain percentage year, they can make that transparent. If a registry wants to reserve the right to charge whatever it wants whenever it wants, it can also do that. They just have to, you know, let customers know about that before they come in the door.
Yeah, no, I get that, and I'm not sure why this last couple sentences are in this section. But these last sentences are much broader. It's to ICANN-designated web page where you are developing registrant rights and responsibilities and a link to our policies. So that's not just pricing. That's anything. And the second point is that what we provide now is we don't have a link to our registry services policies. We actually put them into the registry registrar agreement, and I understand why we're the ones that need to enforce that. But I have no idea why we need to enforce that a registrar has a link to your policy on registrant rights and responsibilities.
Do we have a similar provision in the RAA?
It's in the RAA amendment. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but the idea here comes out of the RAA amendments. Have a similar idea that registrars are going to have a link to a ICANN and publicly developed page on registrant rights and responsibilities.
Okay.
And off the top of my head, I'm just not sure why it's stuck here.
Yeah, I mean, if it's in the RAA, then you already have it. You have what you need, because you can audit the registrar at any time to make sure it's got that. But why is that a registry issue?
Okay, we got that comment, and we'll look at that. Thanks. I think we're down to our last 5 minutes, and I know Kurt's going to have to leave. Is there any... Kurt, do you want to...
Well, I just want to have a brief discussion about what we think the next steps are. I think, you know, we certainly have all your comments. I'm not sure, but I think we heard that the people that spoke on this call are opposed to any mechanism for amending the registry agreement other than the policy development process and limiting changes to those effects, except for some administrative changes.
And the emergency procedures that you have in there.
And so did not want to discuss a mechanism for, you know, amending the mechanism that's in the proposed agreement to create a mechanism for amending the agreement some other way.
Well, also, though, Kurt, I think John said you guys would come back with some situations where you think that might be needed outside the picket fence. And so I assume then once we got that, we would respond to that. Is that correct, John?
Yeah, I think on a separate track, we'll address that issue relatively specifically, and it might be in an email. We'll try to figure out what form. So that it could be posted and it could be provide additional input into this discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll get some additional comments from, I'm sure, some of the individual registries on some of the other terms. And we've been through a lot of calls with some of the other issues that we haven't mentioned, but on this call, but certainly have mentioned previously.
Just okay, we'll look out for that. And so again, if I can invite you to, you know, any comments you have are great. Especially appreciated would be, you know, if you have specific like line items, like, you know, on that you pointed out in section 2.9, you know, maybe strike this last sentence. Those are also helpful. Just we're dealing with a kind of a volume problem where we're having so many calls, so many common forums, so many whatever they are, that it's going to be hard to keep track of all the suggestions. So definitely keep it. It's great to have these conversations, but also we invite the comments in by writing too.
Right. That you sound like me, Dan, on that call yesterday and the previous call.
That was so good.
I think I might have asked yesterday, but I forgot the answer. When do you think this price control paper is going to come out, and what do you think it affects? What issue? What do you hope to get out of it, or hope we get out of it?
Well, there was a comment about that there should be price control.
At the time.
There was comment we received about whether or not there should be price controls in the registry agreement, or whether there should be price controls on renewals. And so we commissioned an independent economist to write a report addressing those issues. And so, the report should be used to, you'll see, but the report can be used to, support a position for the registry agreement.
And we'll be posting that publicly and soliciting comments generally, not just within this constituency. And I'd be cautious about having a price controls discussion in this call.
Yeah, no. That's not the intent of this call. I was just asking as far as when that was going to be posted, and also whether that paper is going to look at existing TLDs in addition to new TLDs.
Well, it's focused at new TLDs. I don't know. I'm trying to spin off the preliminary version of the paper. I saw to see if it was applicable across the board, but I don't recall that.
And without getting into a discussion, I'm assuming that the rationale will be generic enough. Never mind. I'll put this in our New Stars comments. I don't want to cross any lines. So.
Good. Thanks.
I think we're just about up to our 4:30 timeline for the call. Are there any final comments that folks want to make before we sign off today?
Just one, Craig. I think everybody knows this, and I think it's been acknowledged in some of people's statements, but obviously we didn't necessarily cover everything in our written comments, but I know you guys know that already.
Thanks, Chuck.
Hello. David, thank you very much for taking this time. I think really cleared some air here, and we're looking forward the revised agreement that take account of all of our concerns and issues, and all happy.
As soon as the MP3 recording of the call is available, I'll circulate it to all the participants.
Is it going to be available to people outside the constituency, or is this really internal?
This is external, I believe.
There we go.
Okay.
Hey, Craig, this is Ray. As long as you're on the phone, can I ask a question regarding this Cray thing on December 11th?
Hey, should we ask the operator to stop the recording?
Yes, please.
Operator?
Yes, one moment.